Well, Sunday Extra is becoming a bit of a whistle-stop tour of the 2026 Axis of Evil today, because from North Korea, we move now to diplomatic developments for another pariah nation. In fact, two, because Russia and the Taliban-led government of Afghanistan recently signed a military cooperation agreement. The Taliban had been on Russia's list of banned terrorist groups from 2003 until April of 2025. But last year, Russia became the first country to formally recognise the Taliban as the government of Afghanistan. Alexander Cooley is Claire Tao Professor of Political Science at Barnard College and an expert on governance in Russia and Eurasia, and also the co-author of the 2025 book Dictating the Agenda, The Authoritarian Resurgence in World Politics. Professor Cooley, thanks very much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
It's nice to be with you.
Alexander, this military cooperation agreement was signed on the 27th of May. How much do we know about it?
We know actually very little about it in terms of the actual details. This seems to be more of a symbolic, a status type of agreement where Russia knows full well that it's the first major power to recognize the Taliban and its government. Others have de facto and pragmatic relations and diplomatic relations, but it wants to give it official status and recognition. I think this is more about signaling that Afghanistan is going to be a partner to both Russia and to the Central Asian states, right? So Russian strategy documents constantly invoke the threat of Afghan instability, right? And in this case, that is pretty much a direct reference to ISIS and ISIS-K, right? And so there's a common enemy here, but Russia also has a security presence in the stands above Afghanistan, yeah? In Tajikistan, in Kyrgyzstan, and it regards these post-Soviet Central Asian states as part of its sphere of influence. So by signing a security agreement with Afghanistan, it's giving a purpose to its military presence, basing presence in Tajikistan and in Kyrgyzstan. So this is really more about geopolitics and diplomacy. There seems to be very little in terms of details of actual military hardware or obligations or training or even like the right to purchase weapons at discounted prices. This really seems more about symbolism.
Yes, in Moscow for the signing of the MOU, the Afghan defense minister said Afghanistan and Russia have long-standing and historic relations, which I suppose must be true. But recalling the ill-fated Soviet invasion of Afghanistan in 1979 wouldn't lead one to expect a military cooperation agreement between these parties. Could you give us a little bit more detail on the dynamics of the relations between Russia and Afghanistan over the last couple of decades?
What's interesting is that, and we tend to forget it in times like these, especially with the war in Ukraine and relations between the West and the United States and Russia being as poor as they are now. Right after 9/11, Vladimir Putin was the first world leader to call George W. Bush, right? And he talked about a common civilizational struggle that they were facing. And he offered the use of old Soviet air bases in Central Asia against the better wishes of some of his general staff, also offer some intelligence cooperation. And in fact, there's a famous quote of his when they were doing a press conference out in the ranch in Texas when he was visiting the American president, when he was asked, aren't you concerned that American forces being in Tajikistan are going to carve out a sphere of influence, right? Are going to project regional power. He said, I'm more concerned about the Islamic militants going to places like Dagestan and Northern Caucasus, right? So initially anyway, Putin saw this as a way of being a partner, a mediator, right? Speaking for Central Asia and really sort of projecting himself on the world stage as a great power. Now, that all unravels in the space of about 18 months. In 2003, in the lead up to the Iraq War, major combat operations are over, but U.S. and allied forces are still in Central Asia. And Putin gets very nervous. Why are you still here? What are you doing? Are you promoting color revolutions? Are you seeking to sort of destabilize these governments? And then the relation becomes tense and then becomes contested. Then Putin starts putting pressure on governments like Uzbekistan and in Kyrgyzstan to evict the Americans. Then you actually see a period prior to the U.S. withdrawal where Russia is actively playing a behind-the-scenes mediating role. It's inviting the Taliban for talks in Moscow in anticipation of American withdrawal. and much to the annoyance of a lot of members of ISAF and the international community. And so when the United States leaves in this sort of frenzied, some would say shambolic way, Russia now has a narrative. Sort of here's another example of a Western military intervention that comes in and it leaves the place in chaos. It leaves it in ruins. This is what the United States does, right? Whether it's Iraq, whether it's Afghanistan. So that becomes a kind of a common meme that they have, this sort of idea that the West messes things up, that we need to sort of band together to keep the West out, prevent any more military bases. Remember, Russia also vetoed withdrawal bases for the U.S. when it was getting out, said, no, you can't use sort of facilities to facilitate that exit. So I think the other strategic move here on Moscow's part is because it's the first mover here, right? And it is a bridge too far for some of its neighbors and for China. It feels that perhaps it gets a little bit of sort of special recognition from the Taliban and it carves out its own sphere of influence. Now, the reality is the trade between Russia and Afghanistan, it's really low. Like, we don't have the exact customs statistics. It's less than $1 billion, probably more in the hundreds of millions. And at the end of the day, there are very like few actual sort of commercial ties or sort of people to people ties. But it's really the status and the anti-Western message here that the Kremlin wants to solidify and also to create this kind of Eurasian axis that involves China, it involves the Central Asian states, Iran now, Afghanistan, all again committed to sort of a more autonomous foreign policy that opposes Western intervention, Western sanctions, and so forth. You know, the other side of this is Moscow has been very quick now to downplay, you know, human rights, women's rights, inclusive governance, all the things that Western governments want to see from the Taliban before they enter in any kind of sort of recognition diplomacy with them. And so it's quickly sort of changed its tune and just said, these are sort of sovereign matters sort of for Afghanistan.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Professor Alexander Cooley about the military cooperation agreement between Russia and the Taliban-led government of Afghanistan. And Alexander, given the beliefs of the Taliban, it seems almost ironic that Russia and Afghanistan would have a common interest in fighting Islamic extremism in different forms. But how big and real is the threat of a different Islamic insurgency and how much of a power base does it have in parts of Afghanistan?
There have been cases of military operations and terrorist attacks and bombings in Russia itself. And so the concern I think that Moscow has is that there are sort of ISIS networks that get incubated in third party countries, not necessarily in Afghanistan, but in, say, the Central Asian states, possibly even in places like Turkey, in places like Europe. So I think their perspective is that it's better to deal with a state government that you can cooperate to sort of survey and contain these kinds of insurgent sort of transnational networks. At the same time, it's completely within, I say, Moscow and the Central Asian states kind of sort of routine security rhetoric to talk about instability, right? To talk about the problem of the border, to sort of play up the Islamic threat, to justify the militarization of the border, as well as crackdown on the home front. And so that's, you know, that's been a kind of a longstanding practice in the Central Asian states themselves.
What's been the reaction of Afghanistan's neighbors to the news of this military cooperation deal with Russia?
Certainly there's concern and there is recognition that Russia is trying to be sort of pragmatic. At the same time, there is real suspicion as to, you know, whether the Taliban has the capacity and the political will to actually patrol itself and keep these other sort of elements from spilling over. I think for most of the neighbors, recognition is something that they want to wield as a lever, right? There are not a lot of sort of levers over Afghanistan. And so this is something, for example, the Chinese have been doing, or, you know, the Uzbeks and so forth. Recognition is sort of, you know, the ultimate prize, and none of these countries really want to give it away, you know, in the process of a very sort of turbulent
neighborhood where they want to sort of ensure that Afghanistan doesn't revert to sort of old ways of incubating militants and cross-border spillover.
Do you think that the diplomatic recognition of Russia and the military cooperation agreement do actually in some way enhance the status of the Taliban government more broadly and make it more likely that there will be diplomatic recognition by others?
I think what the Taliban had hoped was that this would allow the Central Asian states, with which they do share borders, with Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and Turkmenistan, to give them official recognition. Now, again, there's pragmatic relations, diplomatic missions, there's trade with the Turkmens, right? The Kazakhs, too, have diplomatic ties, but not official recognition ties. But it doesn't seem like the Central Asian states want to do that. Again, they have their own domestic constituents. The post-Soviet Central Asian states have always been deeply suspicious and nervous about what goes in Afghanistan, right? They don't view Afghanistan as being part of the same Central Asia region, conceptually. They view Afghanistan as a place over there that's relatively dangerous and that needs to have the sort of real militarized borders and mechanisms for keeping them out. Like, that's the mentality. So we haven't seen enthusiasm for those official recognitions. I think for the Taliban, it's a symbolic victory domestically. It is a source of legitimacy. But the final point I'd make on this is Russia in general, I would say, is perceived as a revisionist power that tends to confer recognition and status to governments that many others in the world don't. Russia recognizes Abkhazia as an independent state, Northern Ossetia as an independent state, right? So I don't think that Russian recognition has the global status, perhaps. Of course, you know, a country like China or, you know, the European Union or even Turkey would carry.
The Diplomat magazine has reported that one aspect of this agreement, which might be to Russia's benefit, is provisions relating to migrant labor and addressing a labor shortage within Russia. Do you put much stock in that factor?
I don't think so. Not in terms of sort of a pragmatic solution to what is really a serious and acute labor shortage problem that Russia has. For the last really 20 years, Russia has been heavily dependent on post-Soviet Central Asian labor migration from Tajikistan for construction workers, Uzbekistan as well, Kyrgyz workers, and many of them settled in Russia, actually took pathways into Russian citizenship, and many of them sort of exited. What's happened over the last couple of years as a result of the Ukrainian war is that Central Asian migrants have become more nervous about their status and their rights within Russia. We see reports of them being sort of whisked away onto the front or tricked into conscription. And we also see arbitrary roundups and sort of expulsions and sort of the rules on their short-term stays being changed on them. And so, understandably, many of these Central Asian countries have started diversifying their option for migration, right? So we've seen actually migrants preparing to go places like Korea, the European Union, actually, even the United States post-COVID, right? So they've been trying to sort of diversify. And I think this is sort of Russia's way of saying, well, we have options too. But practically speaking, it's going to be very difficult for an Afghan worker who doesn't speak Russian or even sort of rudimentary Russian to really function or even to be accepted on a temporary basis in Russian society.
Alexander Cooley, thanks so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Hey, great to be with you.
Professor Alexander Cooley is Professor of Political Science at Barnard College, and his 2025 book is Dictating the Agenda, The Authoritarian Resurgence in World Politics.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.